5:13 is the word sannyas. 20.
Study the first 12 verses of chapter 18, and these first 12 verses, they summarize all of Krishna's teaching on karma, on karma yoga. And they represent or summarize the first 6 chapters of the Gita. And now, from verse 13 to verse 18, is a summary of the last 6 chapters of the Gita, and they summarize all of Krishna's teachings on jnana or Vedanta. And then after this, Krishna goes back and begins describing karma again, different activities in the different modes of nature. So he's summarizing. Therefore, we understand that this chapter is a summary of the whole book. First part, karma, and then now we're talking about jnana. And then gradually he works his way up to bhakti. We'll see how that happens. So, the last verse, 12, Krishna was describing for how someone who is in a renounced order, he has no results to suffer and enjoy from his activities. So in the commentaries, Arjuna says, how can someone work and not get the results of his work? So Krishna now describes that in the next section. And he says, by working without false ego, one reaps no fruit from his work. When one gives up this sense of doership, he becomes free from reactions. And he knows that Krishna is the supreme doer. Panchayatat mahabaho karanani nibodame sankhe kritante bhoktani siddhaye sarvakarmanam. Almighty armed Arjuna, according to Vedanta, there are 5 causes for the accomplishment of all action. Now learn of these from me. So to help us perform activities without being bound, Krishna speaks Vedanta and analyzes activities in according to 5 causes. Prabhupada comments, as I already mentioned, I think it was Baladevati Bhushan, a question may be raised that since any activity performed must have some reaction, how is it the person in Krishna consciousness does not suffer or enjoy the reactions of work? And here the Lord is citing Vedanta to show how this is possible. So Krishna is describing how to do verse 12 in this section. And here's the main thrust. This is the important verse here. Text 14. Adishtanam tatha karta karanam cha pratak vidham vividas cha pratak cheshta devam chayvatra panchamam. The place of action, the body, the performer, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the supersoul, these are the 5 factors of action. So here is the 5 factors that makes one knows this, then he can act and work without getting bound by the reactions of work, because he understands that there are different causes of work. It's not that he's the only doer, that the jiva, one on his own, he's doing everything on his own. So people who think like that, they get bound by their activities. I remember a friend of my parents, a guy used to come over to the house, and he was, half of the time he was drunk, and I remember he used to boldly claim that he used to talk like this. I don't believe in anything, man. No one can help me. Only the sweat of my brow. I've made myself what I am today. Like this. He was just into that he is the doer and he is the controller. And he doesn't believe in anything. He doesn't care about God or anything else. Just his hard work. And by the sweat of his brow, he made himself successful in life and he climbed the ladder of success in his company or whatever it was. So most people think like this, and this is demoniac type of way of thinking. And Prabhupada, well, Krishna describes this later, just in a few verses. Prabhupada comments, the word adhishtanam refers to the body. So that's the entire body. The soul within the body is acting to bring about the results of activity and is therefore known as the karta, the doer. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan also describes that the karta is the soul. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the false ego. So when the living entity acts in this material world, he's acting through the false ego. It's kind of, in a way, it's like the soul steps into the shoes of the role that he's playing. And in that role, he acts as a doer. But actually, because we know that the soul really doesn't do anything, but he acts as a doer when he thinks of himself in this enjoying role. So in a sense, they're both right. But Prabhupada always presents Baladeva Vidyabhushan's side of the, you know, his angle. And he quotes, the soul is the knower and the doer, esha hidrashta srashta, and karta shastra darvatva. Then the instruments of action, karanam, are the senses, and the senses, by the senses the soul acts in various ways. For each and every action there's a different cheshta, or endeavor. But all one's activities depend on daiva, the super soul, who's seated within the heart as the friend. The Supreme Lord is the super cause. Under these circumstances, one who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the super soul is not bound by any activities. Those in complete Krishna consciousness are not ultimately responsible for their actions. Everything is dependent on the Supreme Will, the Super Soul, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when one is in complete Krishna consciousness, then he is completely free from all karma. And he acts as Krishna's instrument, nimitta matram bhavisava sachin. Then even though he can kill so many people in the battlefield, because he's acting as the Lord's instrument, he gets no reaction. And this is the reason why Krishna is speaking this to Arjuna, to incite him to fight. He's speaking karma yoga to get him to realize that he should do his duty for purification and to set an example for others. And he's giving him the teachings of jnana to get him to understand that he's not the doer, that actually the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, is the real sanctioning Upadrashtanamantacha. He's overseeing everything, and that Arjuna is meant to act as an instrument, being part and parcel of the Lord. So both through karma yoga teaching and through jnana yoga teaching, Krishna is inciting Arjuna to fight through these both means. Text 15. Sharira vanmano biryat karma prarabhate naraha nyayam va vapritam va paichaite dasya hetavaha. Whatever right or wrong action a man performs by body, mind, or speech is caused by these five factors. So, right and wrong means in terms of the scriptures. Wrong work is against the scripture, and right is according to the scripture. Oh yeah, I forgot. There was a comment by Baladeva Vidyabhushan in the previous verse, and that was that. Well, if the super soul is the ultimate factor of all action, and the jiva is under the Lord's control, and his acts don't come of his own will, then is he just like a stone? And in the case that he's just like a puppet, or like, you know, he's being moved by the Lord, and the jiva has no free will, then what's the use of all of the instructions of the shastra? Then they're all useless, because if he's not in control of his own will, what's the sense of, you know, telling him to do something or not do something? So then the Lord answers that. Well, Baladeva Vidyabhushan answers, from the Lord, the jiva gets body and senses and specific energy which energizes him to act and do things in the world. He has intelligence and so forth. So with these, and with these agents, these potencies of the Lord, he thinks himself to be the proprietor and he acts in different ways. And acquiring these potencies, the jiva exerts his will in this world and does certain things. And he assumes control of his body and senses to fulfill certain karmic endeavors, to fulfill his desires. And the Lord from within sanctions the jiva's activities and allows him to act. He inspires him to act. He instigates the jiva to perform those activities based on the jiva's desires. So the Supersoul perceives the desire of the jiva and then instigates him to act in that way. So in this way, he says there's no contradiction between the Lord's control, which is providence or daiva, and the jiva's own willpower to act. That both of these things are going on side by side. And this is a classic question in religion and philosophy about daiva and cheshta, or you can say, you know, providence and one's own willpower. These things are always being discussed. So he says that there's no contradiction because both of them are working together. The Lord is the sanctioner and he provides everything that the jiva needs to act. That means he's the facilitator. He's energizing the jiva and he gives him the body and the senses and energy. And then he perceives the jiva's desire and then he instigates him to act. So the jiva then can use these things to fulfill his desire, his own desires. So both of these things are together. So now in this verse, Krishna just describes that there are three kinds of activities with the body, mind, and speech. And then they can also be divided into right and wrong. So we have six categories. And it's right if it's according to the Shastra, and it's wrong if it's not. Text 16. Tatraivam satikartaram atmanam kevalam tuyaha pashantya kritya buritvan nasa pashanti durmati. Therefore, one who thinks himself the only doer, not considering the five factors, is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. So the word here, kartaram, the person who thinks that kevalam tuya, that only I have done it. Kevalam means only me, exclusively. Then this person is pashati, although he sees, he is akritya buridvan. And he cannot see, nasa pashati. Pashati. That's the verse in the Bhagavatam. Although he's seeing and he's acting, he's foolish. He's durmati. Because he thinks that ahankara imuratma kartaham iti manyate. He thinks I'm the karta. Kartaham iti manyate. So Krishna before he said such a person is vimudha. And now he's calling him durmati. And in 16th chapter he said Ishvaraham aham bogi balavan sivaham balavan sukhi. He said that this is a demoniac mentality. I'm the doer, I'm the controller. So the same thing here. So the cause of bondage is the feeling that only I am the doer. So this is with this word kevalam. But in the commentary, Prabhupada says that the final cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, one should see not only the four material causes, but the Supreme Efficient Cause as well. One who does not see the Supreme thinks himself the doer. Okay. 17. Yasya naham krito bhavo buddhir yasya na lipyate advapi sa imalokan na hanti na nibhanyate One who is not motivated by a false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. So someone who doesn't think himself to be the doer, and his intelligence is not entangled, even though he's killing men in this world, he doesn't kill. He's free from that reaction or responsibility. And so we understand that this is present in this principle of not being responsible is even present in the modern world. Just like if someone doesn't have the sense of doership like a child or a madman or a dog, then they're not held responsible for some action. If a child steals something or kicks somebody in the shins, you know, then nobody arrests the child and throws him in jail. Or if the dog poops on the sidewalk, then he doesn't get thrown in jail because he's not aware of his, he's not the doer, he's not taking responsibility for the activity. So similarly, on the spiritual platform, the same principle is true. He's like a karma yoga soldier. He's become free from the reactions of his work due to his freedom of false ego. So Krishna is saying that such a person is not bound, even if he kills the entire universe. What to speak of Bhishma, Drona, and Karna, who Arjuna is greatly fearful of. I was wondering, has anyone experienced being led to do something at some time in your life by Krishna, which was obvious to you? Somehow you felt that you should do a particular activity, and perhaps others around you thought, you know, questioned that. You know, why is he doing that? Or maybe they ask you directly, why are you doing this activity? But you felt that you understood that this needs to be done, and that somehow Krishna was leading you to do a particular activity. But people around you didn't understand that. Jnanam jayam parijyata trividha karma chodana karanam karma karteti trividha karma sangraha. Knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower are the three factors that motivate action. The senses, the work, and the doer are the three constituents of action. So here's some familiar words. Jnanam, Gyayam, Parijnata. These are called karma chodana, or the motivators, or these things with that, the items that encourage work or stimulate someone to work. It also means like a command from the Shastra. This word chodana. Jnanam, knowledge of the soul and the supersoul. The object of knowledge, gayam, that means the soul and also the supersoul. And the knower, parigyata, that's the soul. And the supersoul too. So, these three things are the factors, motivating factors. Prabhupada discusses that this is the daily, the impetus for daily work. He says, before anyone acts, there is some impetus, which is called inspiration. Any solution arrived at before work is actualized, any solution arrived at before work is actualized, is a subtle form of work. Then work takes form of action. So first one has to undergo the psychological processes of thinking, feeling, and willing, and that is called impetus. The inspiration to work is the same if it comes from the Shastra or from the Guru. When the inspiration is there, and then the worker is there, then the work takes place. And then you need the last three things, which are karanam, karma, karpeti. Karanam is the senses, karma is the work, and karta is the worker. So actually you have, like, in all action there's always sambandha, abhideya, and prayojan. So jnana is sambandha, karma, the work, is the abhideya, and the jnana, the object, that is the prayojan of the work. So in order to do anything, you need these three factors. And then if you add the other three factors, the senses, and then the person himself, who is the doer, or the knower, then you have something, then you have work. So Krishna is just analyzing this, so that someone can understand how to work and be detached. So he can analyze himself, he can understand why he's doing things. And if he has knowledge of himself as being different from the body, as the soul, and he understands the super soul, then he has knowledge and he has some motivating factor to work as an instrument on behalf of the Lord as a sacrifice. And then he does the work with his senses. And then he can become detached from the fruits of the work. So this is, you know, this is all given in Samkhya philosophy. All these, the five factors of work, and these six components of work. He's analyzing action or work in this world, in this, through the eyes of knowledge or jnana. So that summarizes the whole study of Vedanta or Sankhya philosophy, and it's the last six chapters of the Gita. This section alone summarizes all these things. And we know that chapter 13 was a outline of the last six chapters, and these things come, jnanam, jnayam, and prakriti, and purusha, and all these items are mentioned. Okay, so any questions thus far? If one has knowledge, then he's acting under the will of the super soul. But then you better be quite sure that, you know, it should be done. Because there are, the other side of the argument is that one should act under the instructions of the spiritual authority in ISKCON, because Prabhupada did want that. Because otherwise you got anarchy and then nothing can get done, because then everybody's just going, well, I don't think that's right, Prabhu, you know. Well, you got to go in and cut up the vegetables, and otherwise the Sunday feast is not going to... Yeah, but these vegetables also have life, and it's also killing them. No one will do anything. They just claim that they're, you know, getting some instruction from the super soul, and then you just got anarchy. So like in New York, even though there was a lot of insanity going on, you know, there's... you know, the leader there, Mali Mardan, was doing all kinds of weird things, and but Prabhupada said this is the right thing to do. You see, you follow the instructions of the authority, and then if you feel that something's wrong, then you go to the higher authority. It's kind of like appealing to a higher court. So there has to be a system to it, you know. So in the case, in one sense, what you did was right, because you acted according to your authority. But if you feel it's something very detrimental to preaching and to, you know, to the temple and in general, there may be an emergency situation, then you have to approach the higher authority and say, this person told me to give these sweets out and they're rotten, and the people are going to be very angry, and, you know, this is very bad for our preaching and so forth. So I don't want to do this, but should, you know. And this is the way we have to have some kind of system. So it sometimes is a very fine line. And nowadays, before it was leaning too much over to the right, whereas you had to do everything you're told. And now it's leaning too much to the left, whereas you should think for yourself, don't be foolish, use your intelligence, don't be duped by this foolish authority who's trying to control you. And you had this too. Before it was too much on this side, and now it's, in present day, it's too much on that side, at least from my observation. But there has to be a middle ground, a more balanced approach to these things. But it's a kind of thing that you should speak to Mahatma about when you have an hour just to talk about this one thing. But we don't have so much time because we have to go through all of these verses. What to do? Say that? Couldn't one? But whether it's factually true or not, that is the important thing. Of course here, you know, Krishna, God himself, he's telling Arjuna to kill. And he's saying, he's already told them, I've already killed them. And you have very evil, greedy person who's trying to take over the emperorship of the earth. And God is presently present telling him, no, he wants the devotees to be in charge. So that's one thing, is the circumstances. Of course, you know, you have the kind of these situations where you get a lot of crazy people in a cult, and they say God is telling us now we should all commit suicide or whatever. And well, what can you say? I mean, people can misuse any philosophy, isn't it? It's true. But as I said, if someone's a murderer, generally he's motivated by false ego, because he's killing someone because he wants their money, he's angry at his lover for cheating him or her. Right? I mean, when you kill somebody, usually there's a lot of false ego there. There's a lot of emotions and motivating factors, other, you know, which are coming from your own sense of doership and enjoyership. So someone who's actually free from these things, then he doesn't get any reaction. And in the common sense, in the modern world, we see when there's a war, and the, you know, soldiers are sent out, and they kill people, and they don't go to jail. But if they go home and they shoot someone in the pub because they get angry, then they're thrown in jail, you know, maybe for the rest of their lives. And the examples that I've given, like a child or an animal or someone who's crazy, he's not held responsible, even though he may commit some sinful act or some violent act. So we can see that it is true, even in the common sense of the term. So in the spiritual sense, it's also true, but it's, you know, how to determine if a person does have false ego? Well, how do you determine if someone's mad? Then you have a psychiatrist, and he states that this person's crazy, he can't be held responsible for his actions. So how can you tell if someone's God conscious and free from false ego? Well, you have to have a sadhu come in and say, you know, that, yeah, this, according to his symptoms, he's like this, he's like that, he does this, he does that, and therefore he's to be considered a sadhu, and he's acting on the order of the Lord. He's fully engaged in devotional service, he's controlling the senses, he knows the shastras, he da 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 da, and right? So there you have it. That's evidence. So when you want spiritual evidence, you come to us. And if you want psychological, psychiatric evidence, then you go to psychiatrists. You don't have, and then the animal and the child, you don't have to prove. Because you can see, there's an animal, there's a child. Right? So some things are easily perceived, and other things you need an expert to tell you who's actually situated in that moment. Okay, now let's forge on. So now, Krishna's beginning a new section here. He analyzes work, knowledge, the worker, intelligence, or discrimination, and determination, and happiness, all in the three modes of nature. This is also summarizing the last six chapters, because in chapter 14 and in chapter 17, Krishna analyzed things according to the modes of nature. And he's going to do it again now. So here you have six items, right? And we'll begin with work, with knowledge and work. Jnana and karma. Jnanam karma cha karta cha chi daiva guna vedataha prochate guna sankhyane tatayava chachinu tanyapni. According to the three different modes of material nature, there are three kinds of knowledge, action, and performer of action. Now hear of them from me. Sarva bhuteshu yinaikam bhavam avyaya ikshate avibhaktam vibhakteshu tajjnanam ini satvikam. That knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. Pritakvena tu yajjnanam nana bhavam pritakvedan veti sarveshu bhuteshu tajjnanam virirajasam. That knowledge by which one sees that in every different body there is a different type of living entity, you should understand to be in the mode of passion. Yattu kritsnam vadekasmin karye saktam vahetukam atatvarta vadalpam cha tatama samudaritam. And that knowledge by which one is attached to one kind of work as the all in all, without knowledge of the truth, and which is very meager, is said to be in the mode of darkness. So, three kinds of knowledge, in goodness, passion, ignorance. The knowledge by which one understands spirit as undivided, although it's divided into different forms, that is knowledge in the mode of goodness. When one comes to the mode of goodness, then he develops spiritual knowledge. He knows Aham Brahmasmi, and he realizes that all other entities are also spirit. But generally, there's an impersonal, this is the impersonal aspect of self-realization that's generally there. Of course, later on, one will realize that all those spirit souls are individual part and parcels of the Lord. But in the beginning, he may just sing, we're all one, all spirit. And that's part of our philosophy too, because we understand that another person is just like me. He's a spirit soul. Any Pati, you want to take your water? Just as I'm thirsty, Vedanipati is also thirsty. Right? And there's a oneness, right? And Ravi is also thirsty, right? There's a oneness. By serving, you know, the other individual, somehow you're serving yourself in a way, you know, because he's not different from you. It's right? That's part of our philosophy. It's the oneness side. But there's abed abed, then you have the difference also. So the impersonalists, they just take the one side, the abed. And knowledge, when you see different entities, different types of entities in different bodies, is raja gyan, because the person doesn't have the perception in goodness that he can see the higher thing, the soul. So he just assumes, he speculates, really, using different kinds of logic and speculation, which is in the modes of passion. He just sees the different entities. Just like we already told Thomas Aquinas, he said that there was a human soul, an animal soul, and a vegetable soul. Like this. And, you know, the Christian church was influenced by this person very much. He's like the Jiva Goswami of the Christians, you know. So, and clearly, this is rajasic gyan. So when someone speculates and has all kinds of twisted, you know, logic and philosophy according to his own vision, then we know that that's motor passion. And it's not based on Shastra. The person may be very intelligent and maybe have a lot of logic, and he may discuss and present it very, you know, astutely. But you have to kind of step back a little bit and then actually listen to what he's really saying, what is the bottom line. So one can also approach Krishna consciousness in that way, in a very mental way, and just never really get to, you know, what is real bhakti in loving Krishna and serving Krishna and sacrifice, and just kind of go around, you know, the periphery of Krishna consciousness, things which are related to Vedic knowledge, and then use in a very twisted way and present philosophy. And now Krishna describes karma three different ways. Niyatam sangarahitam arada dvesha kita afala prepsana karma yatta sattvikam uchete. That action which is regulated and which is performed without attachment, without love or hatred, and without desire for fruited results is said to be in the mode of goodness. So here Prabhupada relates acting in goodness to Krishna consciousness. Regulated occupational duties as prescribed in Shastras in terms of different varnas and ashrams, performed without attachment or proprietary rights, and therefore without any love or hatred, and performed in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the Supreme, without self-satisfaction, is called knowledge, action in goodness. So these are some of the symptoms of acting in goodness. Krishna consciousness is also performed in this way, and then of course there is love for Krishna and other things. But the modus operandi of acting in Krishna consciousness is in the mode of goodness. Because someone's acting without self-interest, without attachment, arāga. His own devotees are arāga. They don't have material attachment, but they have rāga for Krishna. But this is talking about arāga, meaning no, detached from material motivations, without material attachment.
Yattu kamipsuna karma sahankarena vapunaha kriyate bahulaya sam tad raja samudhavitam.
But action performed with great effort by one seeking to gratify his desires and acted from a sense of false ego is called action in the mode of passion.
Anubandham kshayam himsam anapeksha cha paurusam mohat arabhyate karma.
That action performed in illusion, in disregard of scriptural injunctions, and without concern for future bondage or for violence or distress caused to others, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. So here's a very interesting verse. Acting in ignorance is clearly not very good. As illusion, disregard the Shastra, person doesn't care about future bondage or repercussions, and he doesn't care if there's violence or distress caused to others. He just wants to perform that action. And again, it's selfishly performed, and it's irresponsible. Prabhupada says that such irresponsible work is carried out in the light of one's personal experience. This is called illusion. All right. Now a worker with three modes.
mukta sango naham bali drit yutsaha samanvitaha siddhya siddhya nivikara karta satvika uchate.
One who performs his duty without association with the modes of material nature, without false ego, with great determination and enthusiasm, and without wavering in success or failure, is said to be a worker in the Lord of God. To bring one from anishtita vajanakriya to nishtita vajanakriya, if one is enthusiastic, then he can quickly rise above the anarthas which lock him down into this unsteady type of devotional service. So enthusiasm, we can see, is important, and when we're enthusiastic, we feel like we're making progress, we feel happy. But when we're not, we feel the opposite, we feel discouraged and so forth. So many things make the devotees feel discouraged and unenthusiastic. But these are all on the material platform. Because the fact is that, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there's only two realities, Jiva and Harinam, the holy name. So when we focus on what is our real constitutional position, that we're servants of Krishna, and that He is the Supreme, He's controlling everything, we're His servants, we can only do the best we can and try to surrender to Him and serve Him in some way, then we feel enthusiastic, even though there may be so many other things, politics, social confrontation or some interpersonal distractions between devotees in the community or this or that. But these things are all temporary. And if you really fix your mind on Krishna, on the spiritual platform, on the holy name and on the deity, then you can rise above these things and continue to be enthusiastic. Of course, you should also be practical, in the sense you may need to discuss, you may need a certain kind of association, or you may need a certain kind of service or something to help you to come onto that platform. But ultimately, enthusiasm can be maintained if we keep our consciousness fixed on the spiritual platform, if we're really determined to do that. So dhriti and utsaha are combined together here. You have to be determined to be enthusiastic. It's like it's your duty to be happy. It's your duty to be enthusiastic. And if you're not, Prabhupada says in the lecture, if you're not happy, it means you're not Krishna conscious. If you're not happy, you're not doing bhakti. Because when you do bhakti, you get ananda. Because it's made from chit ananda. That's bhakti. So when you do bhakti, you get chit and ananda. Because it doesn't mean that you should just go around smiling or showing your teeth to everyone. Because that means that's not being happy either. That just means, you know, you're showing your teeth. So this... sometimes Krishna may not give us a good result in our action, in our activity, but it may be a test to see what is our real attachment. In other words, He may take away the results, and we may have to just kind of grind it out and push ourselves, and we're thinking, what's going on here? I'm working hard, and I'm not getting what I'm supposed to get, what the result is. But then at that time, we have to prove ourselves to Krishna. Actually, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. So when we have a test from Krishna, then we should see that this is a great opportunity to show Krishna what is our real motivation. It's a chance to prove ourselves to Krishna that we're His devotees and that we just want to serve Him. When we do that, we can actually advance very much. When we pass a test, then we go forward. It thrusts us into the next higher stage of devotional service. So this it's a great opportunity when there's some difficulty or there's some results. It's a test. Krishna is seeing. Because sometimes, many times we're serving Him with some motivation and we need this and we want that and those things are taken away and then we feel distraught and then Krishna wants to see, are you still going to serve me? So that this test helps to, it gives us a chance to purify our motivation. And devotees know that the perfection is in the endeavor. If we just work to please Krishna, then that is the perfection itself. Even though we may not be so successful and we may not be glorified by others or understood by others that we're doing, you know, something to as a sacrifice to please the Lord. So but if we're just trying our best to please Krishna, and that means Krishna will be pleased, and that's the goal. And if Krishna is pleased, then we'll feel some satisfaction, even though some external results may not be there. But usually when you're satisfied and you're linked in with Krishna, sacrificing for Him, then generally you do get good results from your activities. So this is part of some of the things that help one to remain fixed and then continue acting in goodness. 27.
Ragi karma palam pripsur lubdho hingsatma ko sujihi harsha shokanvita karta rajasa parikirtitaha.
The worker who is attached to work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mode of passion.
Prabhupada comments that too much attachment for materialism or hearth and home, wife and children. This is a symptom of someone in passion. He's too attached to a certain kind of work or the results of his work. And the reason is because he has too much attachment for materialism.
And he's simply concerned with making this world as comfortable as possible. He's greedy, and he thinks that anything attained by him is permanent and never to be lost. He's envious of others, and he'll do anything wrong for sense gratification. He's unclean, he doesn't care whether his earning is pure or impure, and he's very happy if he's successful and distressed if he's not successful.
Ayukta prakrita stabdha shato naiskriti kolasaha vishari dilga sutrecha karta tamasa uchate.
The worker who is always engaged in work against the injunctions of the scripture, who is materialistic, obstinate, cheating, and expert in insulting others, and who is lazy, always morose, and procrastinating, is said to be a worker in the mode of ignorance. I remember when I first read this, I thought, wow, this is amazing. An expert in insulting others. Someone in ignorance. In the West, this is the mode of comedy. You know, in America, there was a guy named Don Rinkles who became famous just because he was expert in insulting others. He was a big stand-up comic in... And then later he had his own TV show and he was a big star, celebrity. And he was just, the only thing he could do was, he was expert at insulting people. And he did it in such a way that made others laugh. So, Bhavadi Vidyabhushan says that this person's not careful and he makes mistakes. He's not careful because he's uncultured. He's ungrateful and he's lazy. And because of these, he's dejected, despondent, and slow. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says he's unable to transcend his own nature due to a lack of training. The word Ayukta means he doesn't refer to the Shastra. Prakrita, he's materialistic and stubbed, obstinate, proud.
Shataha means deceitful. It means he hides his own work abilities. I remember I also did this when I was a younger devotee. I saw that the cooks had a hard time of it, you know. They never got to go to any festivals and they never went to India. So I just always stayed away from the kitchen, you know. Although I knew how to cook a little bit. And they'd say, you know how to cook? I'd say, I don't know anything about cooking this. Don't let me, because if you even come near the kitchen, they drag you. You know how you kind of get sucked into something and then you end up doing it completely full time. So, this is a symptom of the mud of ignorance, hiding work abilities. And naskritiko, naskritika, expert in insulting others. Alasa, lazy, means he begins things but he doesn't complete them. And mishadi, it means morose, he's always distressed. Dirga sutri, I don't know what the meaning of it, but it means procrastinating, you're putting off. And what, you know, what takes someone one day, it takes that person a month to do. Because he just keeps saying, I'll just do it tomorrow, and keeps putting it off. Prabhupada mentions these things in the commentaries also. Such workers are not gentle. They're always cunning and expert in insulting us. They're very, very lazy. Even though they have some duty, they don't do it properly and they put it aside to be done later. Therefore, they appear to be morose. They procrastinate. Huh? Or they drag on for years. So devotees are different because they are fixed in serving Krishna. Their knowledge and activities are done to please Krishna, so they come above the modes of nature. Any questions so far? Because now we're going to go into another talk. How you say it, how you think of it. If there's hatred and anger, there's ignorance. If there's just kind of laughing at him in a, you know, condescending way, there's passion. And if you feel concerned for the person, you want to help them, you feel sorry for them, then it's goodness. So it's not what you say, but it's kind of like how you say it, or what's your intention. We have to associate with devotees, so we can't just be alone, and that's no good either. But when we see that the conversation starts to, you know, snowball downhill, right, and a downward spiral, then we have to say, whoa, hold on here, what are we doing, you know? It's not so good to talk like this. Let's try to adjust ourselves a bit.
I'm sorry, I
read Prabhupada's comments on that. One who does not develop knowledge through the authority of Shastra has knowledge limited to the body. He is not concerned about acting in terms of Shastra. For him, God is money, and knowledge means the satisfaction of bodily demands. Such knowledge has no connection with the absolute truth. It's like knowledge of the ordinary animals. So that's more of ignorance. Well, when we're attached to one kind of devotional service, it's different than one kind of work, because that we know that that's our link with Krishna. And it's understood and it's explained in some places that when someone's in a beginning stages, he's attached to the work for Krishna and he gets pleasure from doing that. But later when he matures, he's attached to Krishna, to the person he's serving, and the kinds of work don't matter so much. So you could say it's kind of the ignorance of one's relationship with Krishna, and therefore he's just attached to doing a certain kind of service. Just like I remember when I did Sankirtan, I loved it so much. It was so much fun running around and going here and there and going from one city to another, and you felt so, you know, it was running from one person to the next and collecting all this money, and sometimes the police would chase you and you'd run and this and that, and all kinds of crazy things would happen, and people would give you big donations, and sometimes they'd start crying, or, you know, all kinds of, so many things that, you know, happened on Sankirtan. It was so ecstatic, and I was so attached to that one kind of service. But later, you know, I could understand that. So then once people get the books, they need some training, they need some help, they need someone in the temple to bring them to the further stage, and that's really what should be done. So, and I'm too old to run around anymore, you know, anyway, so I might as well stay in the temple and preach to them. You know, so it's gradually, I might have been in ignorance about cultivating people, helping them to become devotees, and, you know, congregational preaching, and da da da, and so many things. And I just think that this is it, you know. And a lot of devotees also thought this is just book distribution. This is it. This is the all in all. This is the main. This is the only real service, and it's gone. And, you know, we're the best. And it's a kind of ignorance of the other things. So there is a kind of ignorance there. It's true. It does have some relation. But because it's not ignorance, because it's devotional service, so it's again different. So Prabhupada summarizes, he says, in other words, knowledge concerning the spirit soul beyond the body is called knowledge and goodness. Knowledge producing many theories and doctrines by dint of mundane logic and speculation is the product of passion. And knowledge concerned only with keeping the body comfortable is an ignorance. So that's clear. You have like the body, the mind, and then like the intelligence. That's the kind of, you have knowledge about the body is ignorance, knowledge about the mind, speculating and these things, and that's passion. And then knowledge of the soul, and the real intelligence, and that's knowledge and goodness. And we've done action and worker. I guess we'll. Any other questions about these things so far? We can maybe do one more. Okay, text 29. Buddhir vedam griteschaiva gunatasci vedam shinu pochyamanam sheshena pratakmena dananjayam. O winner of wealth. Now please listen as I tell you in detail of the different kinds of understanding, buddhi, and determination, dhriti, according to the three modes of material nature. Pravittim cha vrittim cha karya karya bhaya bhaye bandha moksham chaya veti buddhi sa parta satviki osana pritta. That understanding by which one knows what ought to be done and what ought not to be done, what is to be feared and what is not to be feared, what is binding and what is liberating, is in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada comments that understanding which discriminates by intelligence is situated in the mode of goodness. Because in the mode of goodness one has this discriminatory power. He's very pensive, thoughtful, observant, peaceful. So his brain can work clearly, you know, he can think clearly because he's peaceful enough. And people are so passionate, so many desires are flashing through their minds all the time, and emotions, so that they can't really penetrate very deeply and think very deeply about something. And then ignorance completely covered. Bhaya and abhaya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, bhaya means fear of entanglement, and abhaya means fearlessness, or like a sense of freedom or liberation. So the thing not to be feared is freedom, and the thing to be feared is entanglement in the material world. Text 31. Yaya dharmam madharmam cha karyam cha karya eva cha ayantabad prajananti buddhisaparta rajasi. O son of Pritha, that understanding which cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, is in the mode of passion. adharmam dharmam iti ya manyate tamasarda sarvatthana pirantanscha buddhisa parta tamasin. That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion under the spell of illusion and darkness and strives always in the wrong direction, O Partha, is in the mode of ignorance. So in passion, the person is not sure between right and wrong, religion and irreligion. But in ignorance, he's quite sure, but he's got it wrong. So if you want to find out the truth, go to someone in ignorance, ask them what to do, and then do the opposite thing. And then you'll be sure that you'll be doing the right thing. So these people in ignorance, they see material as spiritual and spiritual as material. Like they think, you Krishnas are the devil. You Hare Krishnas must be evil. Heard this kinds of people in the Bible Belt in America. They think that, you know, we're Satan worships Satan. And they're quite sure of themselves, you know. They're convinced. They think that we're evil. We don't eat meat, you know. So there's lots of people like that. There are thousands, millions of them. Whereas in the mode of passion, their intelligence is kind of based on trial and error, and it's based on conditioning and emotions. And this, these people, they can't suss us out, they can't figure us out. But people in ignorance, then they're quite sure that we're evil, we're of the devil, and we're going to go to hell. And dhriti. Dhrityaya dharayate mana pranendriya priyaha yoganavya vicharinya dhritti saparta satviki osanaprita. That determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained with steadfastness by yoga practice, and which thus controls the activities of the mind, life, and senses, is determination in a mode of goodness. So dhritti, it says, mana pranandriya kriya. It's sustained by steadfastness of yoga, and it controls the activities of the mind, life, and senses. Life, I guess, meaning prana, also means the life airs of the body. Because dhriti, when you... when you become determined to do something, then the life airs activates the life airs. When the mind becomes convinced and determined, it activates the life airs in the body, and it gives the body this energy to perform the activity. But that determination may be based on different things. If it's just based on want for money, people who want money, which is described in the next verse, right, then they also become very determined. But their determination is faltering just based upon the money. When the money disappears, then the determination is gone. Right? And when the determination is just based on dreaming and illusion, you know, the person, I don't know, it could be so many things, then there's some determination there also. But it's based on illusion. Let's just read the other verses now. 34.
Yatu dharma karma tan dritya dharyate arjuna prasangena phalankanshi dhriti saparta rajas.
But that determination by which one holds fast to fruited results in religion, economic development, and sense gratification is of nature of passion. So even in religious activities, we see this. It can happen.
Yaya svapnam bhayam shokam vishadam madame bacha nave munchati nurmeda dhriti sabartatam.
And that determination which cannot go beyond dreaming, fearfulness, lamentation, and moroseness and illusion, such unintelligent determination, is in the mode of darkness. So in the mode of goodness, we have yoginavya vicharinya, that there's a person who is fixed, his determination is based on yoga, means he has a very lofty and long-term goal. And he dedicates his entire life to doing that particular activity. And he doesn't waver. Because he has this long-term goal to perform, or to achieve. Therefore, he just continues year after year. And he strives for that. And someone who has their eyes set on a particular goal, and he gets, with that determination, he gets this energy to cut through all of the obstacles. Anything that's obstructing him, he somehow avoids and continues to get this goal. So this yogena avyabhicharini. It's the kind of dhriti in the mode of goodness. And this is definitely has to do with us. This is, we can apply this to ourselves very much. If we're here just to, I don't know, you know, there's so many motivations, maybe to become rich or famous or get a position or whatever, which is the other thing. So when someone wants something for himself, he holds fast to fruit of results in religion or economic development or something, then his determination is different, and it may waver at a certain point. So that's why the discussion of purification of motivation is very important. So we have to really continue to discuss what is the goal, how to get the goal, who are we, who is God, Sambandha Abhidhaya Prayojan, and we have to continually hear about that and to introspect and to see what is our motivation, to make sure that's fixed on Krishna. And even if we have good intentions, it may deviate. So we have to make sure that we continue to keep the right motivation throughout the years that pass in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so we'll stop now. Are there any last questions? The mind is a repository for all different types of memories, different lives, and desires. And they come up. As we're purifying ourselves, different desires come up in the mind. So then we have to deal with that. We have to look at that. And we have to think, do I really want this? My mind seems to want it, but what about me? And then with our intelligence, then we have to discriminate and say, actually, I don't want this. So how can I act in such a way to get rid of this? And then go about doing, finding out how to get rid of it, and then do it. That's, you know, just kind of analysis of that. How and what it is, that's, you know, the particulars are, everyone has an individual different things, and there may be different things to do to get rid of them. The ignorance or the passion, which stops our determination to get to the goal. So many things, you know, offenses or misunderstanding the philosophy or misunderstanding the goal. Right? That's why we have to discuss the philosophy according to the Shastra. I mean, there's so many people that they join our movement, but who knows what kind of goals they have. It's not so, right? Because how many people actually study very deeply these books? It's not. We have to continue to go very deep. And then how many, and then even after studying, how many people introspect and look to themselves and try to purify themselves practically? But your question would take hours to really discuss.
Srila Prabhupada ki.